Puppet's Gaze was presented by Noreen Massoud. The producer was Neil McCarthy.
On BBC Radio 3...
I must confess that I don't really understand how radio works. You see, I'm a deaf person.
A rich and complex deaf culture.
My diagnosis offered my mother a new language, a new community, new friends and a new career path.
There were Christmas parties with deaf Father Christmases and a deaf puppeteer.
In the hierarchy of deafness, there are deaf elitists.
My Deaf World.
I unpack music beyond its sounds, its rhythm, its tone, its physicality.
This Monday to Friday nights at 10:45 on Radio 3 and BBC Sounds.
Next this evening, Drama on Three, which this week features a new production of Inheritors, Susan Glaspell's stage play from 1921. It's introduced by Dr. Laura Rattray, reader in American literature at the University of Glasgow. The play includes some use of the racist language of the time.
Susan Glaspell, American playwright, novelist, short story writer, journalist, actor, and co-founder of the little theatre company, the Provincetown Players, that between 1916 and 1922 produced many early plays of Glaspell and of one, Eugene O'Neill. As a playwright, Susan Glaspell was bold, at times experimental and radical. The Provincetown Players wanted to revitalise American theatre. Glaspell believed commercial Broadway was stagnant. Your mind came out where it went in. Only tireder, she said. Glaspell wanted more for and from her audience. Inheritors, Glaspell's second full-length play, premiered in Greenwich Village in spring 1921 to a country anxious in the aftermath of the First World War. Initially intended to stifle opposition to the war, the Espionage Act of 1917, explicitly name-checked in Inheritors, and the follow-up Sedition Act effectively left individuals who spoke out or wrote in opposition to US government policies risking a jail sentence of up to 20 years. In February 1917, Congress had passed an aggressive new Immigration Act, while the first Red Scare after the war stoked up fear of communism. Written in this tumultuous climate, Inheritors is Glaspell's most overtly political play. Set like many of her works in the Midwest, the first act takes place on the 4th of July, 1879, framing questions of inheritance, before shifting to 1920 and a coming of age. The play's concerns speak powerfully today. Free speech, xenophobia, racism, resonances with the Black Lives Matter movement, mental health, nationalism, the rise of unimpeachable Americanism. And Glaspell was taking risks. The reviewer for Vogue observed that the US Marshal of New York and an assistant turned up to see if rumours of Inheritors' un-Americanism were true enough to justify the play's suppression or amendment. Luckily for Glaspell, the Marshal left after the first act before the scene moved to present day. Critics took Glaspell's work seriously. She was called one of, at times the most important of, contemporary American dramatists. A decade after Inheritors, she became only the second woman to win the Pulitzer Prize for drama. Yet for many years after her death in 1948, Glaspell's story was the depressingly familiar one of the woman artist shunted to the sidelines, her work overlooked. In its centenary year, Inheritors reminds us of the voice we were in danger of missing.
Drama on Three, Inheritors, by Susan Glaspell.
Easy, Bo. Easy. Jeez.
Happy 4th of July, ma'am.
Why, happy 4th of July to you too, young man.
Smith. Mr. Thomas Smith. Oh, please, don't get up on account of me.
Well, how else am I going to get a look at you? My eyes ain't so good. Something about that fine suit of yours tells me it's not me you come to see. My son is still in town with Mr. Fedgebury.
Oh, but the celebrations finished 2 hours ago.
You know how things are when them boys get together all in one square, marching left and right. They have to swap their war stories all over again. Even if it's 1879 and we haven't taken Gettysburg. That's the worst of war. The stories keep going. It was the same with Black Hawk's War.
Yes, yes, I've heard of the war with the Indians.
Heard of it.
Were your men in that war, too?
I was in that war, young man. I threw an Indian in the cellar and stood on the door. Well, I was heavier then. This war, Lincoln's War, it's all a cut-and-dry business now. We used to fight with anything we could lay hands on. Dishwater, whatever was handy.
Well, I guess you believe the saying that the only good Indian is a dead Indian.
No, I don't know. Nobody says that kind of thing around here no more. Especially now they keep them to themselves on the reservation. Yeah, we roiled them up. They was mostly friendly when let be. Didn't want to give up their land. White folks be the same as them now.
Easy. Easy, easy. That hawk's been tracking us all the way from town, right across the prairie. Got old Beau here rattled.
My son Silas thinks the hawks in these parts are Black Hawk's spirit keeping an eye over us, making sure we're worthy inheritors of the land. That's what he said when he turned over his land and them treaties. Silas is not keen to sell, Mr. Smith.
But, but surely since he has more land than any man can use, and if he gets his price...
That's what you've come to talk to him about.
Yes.
Well, you're not the first. Many a man older than you has come to argue their case.
Well, they thought they'd try somebody young.
Someone that knew him thought that up. Silas would help a young one if he could. Yeah. You best come in and wait out of the sun. Oh, take your horse round back to the stable, lest you want old Black Hawk up there to keep riling him. You're lucky I got cookies baked and cooling. And coffee brewed.
Much appreciated, ma'am. I'll be in shortly. Come on, come on. If we could have the hill out there at a fair price.
The hill above the town. Silas would rather sell me and the cat.
But. What's he going to do with it?
Well, maybe he'll keep climbing it once a week.
But if the development of the town demands its use...
You, the development of the town?
I represent it. This town has been growing so fast.
This town began to grow the day I got here.
You mean you began it?
My husband and I began it, and our baby Silas.
Ah, when was that?
1820, near 60 years ago.
And you were here, all alone?
No, we weren't alone. We had the Owens 10 miles down the river.
Yeah, but one family. I should think the Indians would have wiped you out.
The way they wiped us out was to bring fish and corn. We'd have starved to death that first winter if it hadn't been for the Indians.
But if they were such good neighbors, why did you throw your dishwater at them or anything else that you could lay your hands on?
That was after other white folks had roiled them up. Have a cookie and think about it, Mr. Smith. This very land was the land they loved. Black Hawk and his Indians. This is where their fathers were buried. Oh, he used to love that hill. He talked about how the red man and the white man could live together. But poor old Black Hawk, what he didn't know was how many white men there was.
Yeah, but we paid them for their lands. We paid them something.
For 15 million acres of this Mississippi Valley land, best on this globe, we paid $2,234.50. Not a fancy price even for them days. Oh, Ira, let that cat be!
I suppose these are your grandchildren.
No, the boy's my grandson. The little girl is Madeline, Mr. Fedgivery's youngest child.
The Fedgivery place adjoins yours by the creek.
Yes. We've been neighbors ever since the Fedgiverys came here from Hungary after 48. He was a count at home.
Huh.
And a man of learning. But he was a refugee because he fought for freedom in his country. Oh, nothing Silas could do for him was too good. Silas sets great store by learning and freedom.
Well, I suppose, then, that Mr. Fedgivery has a great influence on your son. And that he's a veteran, too.
You don't seem to know these parts well for one that's all stirred up about the development of the town. Yes, Joseph Fedgivery and Silas went off to war together. Fedgivery came back with one arm less than he went with. Oh, Madeline, can't you make Ira leave that poor cat alone? He'll listen to you if you stop entertaining him.
I guess you must feel as if you pretty near owned this country.
We worked. A country don't make itself.
Every time, the same story.
Here are the boys you've been waiting for. Oh, let me get you some more cookies.
No, please. I have eaten enough.
Well, I don't know. Is that any reason you shouldn't have more?
How do, stranger?
How do you do, Mr. Morton?
This young man's been waiting to see you, Silas.
I am Thomas Smith.
How are you today, Mrs. Morton?
I'm not abed and don't expect to be. You're Madeline's playing out the back with Ira.
I hope she hasn't been a trouble to you.
Oh, just the opposite. She's a good influence on Ira.
I wanted to have a little talk with you, if I may.
Well, why not?
I've heard it all. Your folks well?
All well, Mrs. Morton. And my boy Felix is home. Oh. He'll stop by to see you soon.
I hope this is not a bad time for me to present a little matter to you.
Well, that depends, of course, on what you're going to present.
This town is growing very fast, Mr. Morton.
Yes, I know that.
And I presume that you, as one of the earliest settlers, feel a certain responsibility about the welfare of this town.
So, what's your point?
More people, more homes. Isn't it true, Mr. Fedgivery, that it means a great deal to people to have a beautiful outlook from their homes?
Well, it is hard to disagree with you.
I am prepared to make you an offer, Mr. Morton. A gilt-edged offer for that hill above the town.
The hill is not for sale.
I told you.
But wouldn't you consider a particularly good offer, Mr. Morton?
It is beautiful, isn't it?
But do you feel that you have the right, the moral right to hold it?
It's not for myself I'm holding it.
Oh, for the children?
Yes, the children.
What will the children do with the hill when we're gone, Silas?
And if you will excuse me, there are other investments might do the children even more good.
The hill is not for sale.
I am prepared to offer you...
You're not prepared to offer me anything I'd consider. So, I wish you good luck in your business undertaking.
We could make you a rich man, Mr. Morton. Do you think that what you have in mind will make you so much richer?
Much richer. Yes.
Well, then, goodbye. Good day, sir. Good day, ma'am. Thank you for the cookies and your pioneer hospitality.
Good day, son. I'm sorry I couldn't be of help.
What are you going to do with the hill, Silas?
After we get a little glass of wine to celebrate our day, I'll tell you.
I would like to know, too.
Maybe it'd be better to sell the hill while they're anxious.
Your son seems to have another plan for you.
I'll get more cookies.
I'll get them, Mother.
Oh, get them myself. Pity if a woman can't get out her own cookies.
It's a great thing for us to have her, Silas.
Yes. And it's a great thing for us to have you.
Oh.
Here. They did something pretty nice for the Corn Belt when they drove you out of Hungary. You set out to do something for your own country.
No, I'm afraid I've not done much for any country.
Where's your left arm, may I ask?
When I think of what I dreamed as a young man. it seems to me my life has failed.
Well, if your life's failed, I like failure, and I'll drink to it, too.
There's two kinds, Mr. Fedgevery. These have seeds in them.
Oh, thank you. I'll try a seed cookie first.
The Indians used to like my cookies. I was talking to that young whippersnapper about the Indians. One time, I saw an Indian watching me from a bush. See his eyes moving through the leaves. Oh, they made me nervous. So I thought, red or white, a man's a man. I'll take him some cookies.
You like them?
So well that those leaves had eyes next day. He brought me a fish to trade. He was a nice boy. Well,
probably we killed him.
I don't know. Maybe he killed us. Will Owen's family was massacred just after this. Like as not, my cookie Indian helped out there. Something kind of uncertain about the Indians.
I guess they found something pretty uncertain about us.
Six of one and half a dozen of another usually is.
I wonder if I'm wrong. You see, I never went to school.
I don't know why you say that, Silas. There was two winters you went to school.
I mean school the way Mr. Fedgevery went to school. He went to universities in his own countries, in other countries. A house that's full of books makes a different kind of people. It's not the learning itself. It's the life that grows up from learning. Learning's like soil, like fertilizer. Get richer, see more, feel more. You believe that?
Well, Silas Morton, when you've your wood to chop and your water to carry, when you kill your own cattle and hogs, tend your own horses and hens, make your butter, soap, and cook for whoever the Lord sends, there's none too many hours of the day left to be polite in.
You're right, Mother. It had to be that way.
We're honest.
I never knew a family so honest.
But there's another kind of honesty, seems to me, goes with a kind of kindness. Our honesty with the Indians was little to brag about.
Oh, you fret more about the Indians than anybody else does.
To look out at that hill sometimes makes me ashamed.
Oh, land sakes, you didn't do it. It was the government. And what a government does is nothing for a person to be ashamed of.
I don't know about that. Why is Joseph here? Why isn't he not rich and grand in Hungary today? 'Cause he was ashamed of what his government was.
Well, that was a foreign government.
We was foreign to the Indians. It would have done something for us if we'd been a little more like them. Father used to talk about Black Hawk, you know. They was friends, Joseph. I saw Black Hawk once when I was a boy. He looked like the great of the earth, noble, like the forests in the Mississippi. Sometimes I feel that the land itself has got a mind, and that the land itself would rather have had the Indians.
Well, don't let folks hear you say it. They think you was plumb crazy.
Oh, I suppose they would. I love this land. I suppose that's why I never have the feeling that I own it.
If you don't own it, I want to know who does. What do you think we come here for? What do you think we left our folks for? Left the world of white folks, schools and stores and doctors.
No, no, Mother, of course not. I don't say things right.
Is Mrs. Fedgeveri's pansy bed doing well this summer?
Oh, it's beautiful. She was so pleased with the new purple kind you gave her. Oh. I do wish you could get over to see them.
Yes, well, I've seen lots of pansies. Suppose it was pretty fine-sounding speeches they had in town.
Too fine-sounding. Mm.
I'd like to go to a war celebration where they never mention war.
Ah, here's Felix. Just come to see you, Mrs. Morton.
How do, Felix?
And how do you do, Grandmother Norton?
Well, I'm still here.
Well, of course you are.
I've got some cookies for you, Felix. I set them out so you wouldn't have to steal them like when you were a boy.
Thank you. I don't mind if I do. Wow, I've been walking around the town today. It's grown so much this year. And in a way, that means more growing.
And they've even bought ground for some steelworks.
Yes, a city will rise from these cornfields in time. But first, tell us about Harvard College, Felix. Huh. Ain't it a fine thing for us all to have Felix coming home from that wonderful place?
Yeah. Well, you make it seem wonderful.
You know it's wonderful. This place where all that the world has learned is to be drawn from, like a spring.
You're a poet, Uncle Silas. You almost say what Matthew Arnold says. Well, he's a distinguished new English writer who speaks of the best that has been thought and said in the world.
The best that has been thought and said in the world. Why, that's what that hill is for. Don't you see it? End of our trail, we climb a hill and plant a college. Plant a college in this earth.
You mean you're gonna give the hill away?
I'm not giving it away. It's giving itself away.
Oh, don't talk to me as if I was feeble-minded.
I'm talking with all the mind I've got. And whatever I have, it's because of Joseph.
Oh, no, no, I didn't give it to you. It was always there.
You said things that woke things in me, and I thought about them as I plowed. What do you say, Felix?
Well, it's a big idea, Uncle Silas. I love the way you put it. But it's only I'm wondering...
Wondering how it can ever be a Harvard College. Well, it can't. And it needn't be. It's a college in the cornfields where the Indian maize once grew. There's few can go to Harvard College, but more can climb that hill.
Now, Silas, don't be hasty.
Hasty? Oh, it came to me one night. It must have been 10 years ago. Under a starry sky, as I was coming home from your place, Joseph, I'd gone over to lend a hand with a sick horse of yours.
That was nothing new. Old Colonel, you saved him.
Oh, the stars were so bright that night. I climbed the hill that night on the way home, and it was the most beautiful it had ever been. And Black Hawk came to me, talked to me.
Silas, why, he was long dead by then.
Oh, he was there on his own up that old hill with me and the stars. And I said to him...
Oh, you must have been drunk.
I was. But he was still there. I says to him, this hill is more yours than mine. You had it first and loved it best. But it's neither yours nor mine now, but a hill of vision. Here shall come visions of a better world than was ever seen by you or me, old Indian chief. Oh, I was drunk, plum drunk.
I should think you was. And what about the next day's hay?
A day in the hayfield is a day's haying, but a night on the hill is a vision.
We don't have them often, do we, Uncle Silas?
I worked for that hill, and I tell you to leave it to your own children, Silas.
There's other land for my own children. This is for all the children.
What's all the children to you?
Oh, Mother, what a thing for you to say. You, who are never too tired to give up your own bed so a stranger could have a better bed, who'd always leave a lighted window for the traveller who might be lost.
That was different. They was folks on their way.
Miss Orvie?
Yes. I want to pay my debts, for I'm too old to know their debts.
Debts? You don't owe any man.
I owe him, Joseph.
Oh.
And the Indians here before me.
Fiddlesticks.
You haven't read Darwin, have you, Uncle Silas?
Who?
Charles Darwin. The great new man and his theory of the survival of the fittest.
No. No, I don't know things like that, Felix.
Well, I think that it might make you feel better about the Indians. The fittest survive. This had to be.
Us and the Indians? I guess I don't know what you mean by fittest.
Best fitted to the place in which one finds oneself, having the qualities that can best cope with conditions. Oh, from the beginning of life, it's been like that.
Oh, yes. That's the thing the churches are so upset about.
Yes. Well, he says one family of ape is the direct ancestor of man.
You'd better read your Bible, Felix.
Do people believe this?
Well, the whole intellectual world is at war about it.
Anyway, what's the use of believing a thing that's so discouraging?
But is it that? It almost seems to me we have to accept it because it is so encouraging. Why have we hands?
Because God gave them to us, I suppose.
That's rather general. When you think we have hands, because ages back, before life had taken form as man, there was an impulse to do what had never been done. When you think that we have hands today, because from the first of life there have been adventurers, those with the best brains wanted to be more than life had been. And from that aspiration has come doing. And that doing has shaped us, our minds, our bodies.
Well, by God. Doggone you, why didn't you tell me?
Well, I've been thinking about it. I haven't known what to believe.
But think what it is you've said. If it's true that we made ourselves out of the wanting to be more.
It fights with what's there, beliefs.
But it's like I got this belief the other way round, from underneath. As if I'd known it all along, but have just found out.
Silas, what are you doing?
I'm looking for the deed to the hill.
What are you going to do with it?
I'm going to get it out of my hands.
Get it out of your hands? Deed your father got from the government the very year the government got it from the Indians? Oh, give me that. Oh, tell him he's crazy. We got the best land because we was first here. We got a right to keep it.
We weren't here first, Mother.
Silas, it is a serious thing to give away one's land.
Well, you did it. Are you sorry you did it, trying to help a revolution?
No, but it wasn't that different.
How was it different? Yours was a fight to make life more, wasn't it? Well, let this be our way.
What's all that got to do with giving up the land that you provide for our own children?
Isn't it providing for them to give everyone a better world to live in?
I feel you don't realize the immense amount of money required to finance a college. The land would be a start. You would have to interest rich men.
In a town in sympathy with the thing you wanted to do.
Can't you see, Silas? We're all against you.
All against me? But how can you be? Look at the land we walked in and took. Come and look at it. Was there ever such a chance to make life more? There will one day be a college in these cornfields by the Mississippi, because long ago a great dream was fought for in Hungary. And I say to that old dream, wake up, old dream.
You're a fool, Silas. Don't listen to him.
You say we need rich men. Well,
I give you this deed to take to rich men to show them how one man believes enough in this to give the best land he's got.
I can see a light in you that will never go out.
Father.
You can see it now too, can't you? Come with me, Joseph.
Come back here, Silas.
Let's shake on it right out here. And let Black Hawk be our witness. See that college rising as from the soil of the hill itself. Then, maybe, I can lie under the same sod with the Indians and not be ashamed. We're not old. Let's fight. Wake in other men what you woke in me.
Yes. And I, too, will pay my debt to America.
Ah, a fine accompaniment to the day's proceedings, Mr. Fridgeberry. Nothing like a brass band to celebrate American achievement.
How right you are, Senator.
Oh, and this fine painting. This was Silas Morton who founded the place, huh?
Yes, and his hill. I was there the afternoon he told my father there must be a college here. I wasn't any older than my boy Horace is now. I thought hanging him up here on the library walls would instill something special in our students.
Well, he enlisted a good man when he let you in on his grand plans. I've been told the college wouldn't be what it is today but for you.
Well, I think of myself as a proud beneficiary of Uncle Silas and Father's legacy. I have a certain sentiment about it, and where our sentiment is, there our work followed.
Yes, well, it was those mainsprings of sentiment that won the Great War.
Morton College did her part.
A fine showing. 2 years have passed, but we must not forget the sacrifice of your boys.
And we're still holding up our end. This afternoon, you'll see the senior boys drill at our 40th anniversary celebrations. Yeah. It's a great place for them here on the Hill. They're a fine lot of fellows. You know, they went in as strikebreakers during the trouble down at the steelworks. The plant would have had to close but for Morton College. That's one reason I want to propose that the state funds our development. We are an asset, don't you agree? Why don't we take a seat here?
I admit I am very favorably impressed.
I hope you'll tell your committee and let me have a chance to talk to them. The state will lose nothing in having a good, strong college here. A 100% American college.
Yeah, now you're talking. Let's see. Haven't you a pretty radical type of man here?
You mean Holden?
Holden's a man. I've read things that make me question his Americanism.
Oh, I don't think he's so much a radical as a humanitarian.
Yeah, but we don't want radical humanitarians here.
He has a genuine sympathy with the youth. That's invaluable in a teacher, you know. And he's a fine scholar.
No, scholars. We can get scholars enough. What we want is Americans.
Americans who are scholars.
Yeah, you can pick them off every bush. Pay them a little more.
That does interest me. That's another reason I want to talk to your committee. We claim to value education, and then we let highly trained, gifted men fall behind the plumber.
Let the teachers talk to the plumber. Learn a few lessons.
Better not. It would be better if we oversaw an improvement in their pay.
The state does not fund radicals. Why do you keep this man, Holden?
In the scholar's world, we're known because of him. And really, Holden's not a radical in the worst sense. He's an idealist, something of a man of vision.
Oh, I sometimes think the money men have the only vision. Take you, Mr. Fedgebury, a banker. These teachers are all books, books, books. Why, if they had to take for one day the responsibility that falls on your shoulders, big decisions to make, a man among men, all the time worries, irritations, particularly now with labor riding the high horse like a fool.
Yes, and I know your company did much to develop that whole northern part of the state.
Yeah, we did. Well, that's why after three sessions, I'm the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. I know how we use money to promote the state. And if you want my advice, I think your case before the state would be stronger if you let this fellow Holden go.
I'll have a talk with him first.
And tell him it's for his own good. The idea of a college professor standing up for conscientious objectors.
But Fred Jordan was one of Holden's students, a student he valued. He felt Jordan was perfectly sincere in his objections.
Sincere in his objections?
He was expelled from college. That's how we felt about it officially.
Well, I should hope so.
Holden fought us on that. But what brought him into the papers was his protest against the way the boy has been treated in prison.
Well, what's the difference how he was treated? You know how I'd treat him. If I didn't know you for the American you are, I wouldn't understand you speaking so calmly about it.
I'm simply trying to see it from all sides.
It makes me see red.
You know, my nephew gave his life to the war.
That's so.
Ben, Silas Morton's grandson died in France. My sister Madeline married Ira Morton, son of Silas Morton.
I knew there was a family connection between you and the Mortons.
They played together as children and married as soon as they were grown up.
So this was your sister's boy?
Yes, my sister died a long time ago. But Ira is still out at the old place, a place the Mortons took up when they reached the end of their trail. He's never gotten over it.
Those pioneers had a hard life. I suppose Silas Morton's son is active in the college management?
No, Ira is not a social being. His son's death about finished him off. He had been strange for years, ever since my sister died. It was under pretty terrible circumstances. But he can't talk about it, not even to his daughter Madeline. She hardly remembers her own mother.
I can see you thought a great deal of your sister.
Oh, she was beautiful. She shouldn't have gone like that.
Now, isn't there something about corn up at the old farm?
Yes. Ira's corn has taken the state prize for several years.
Ah.
They've given it his name, Morton Corn. It's a good thing Ira has it, for it's about the only thing he does care for now. Oh, his daughter Madeline, of course. Oh, she's here in the college, one of our best students. I'd like you to meet her. She's a great girl, though a little peculiar at times.
Well, that makes a girl interesting, if she's not peculiar the wrong way. It sounds as if her home life might make her a little peculiar.
Madeline stays here in town with us a good part of the time. My wife is devoted to her. We all are. Ah, here's my boy Horace.
Oh.
This is Senator Lewis, who is interested in the college.
How do you do, Senator Lewis?
Pleased to meet you, my boy.
What are you doing in the library? I thought this was a day off.
I'm looking for a book.
You are, Horace? Now, how does that happen?
I want the speeches of Abraham Lincoln.
Ah, you couldn't do better.
Well, I'll show those dirty dagos where they can get off.
Are you talking about the students from India?
Yes, the dirty dagos.
Indians aren't dagos, you know, Horace.
Well, what's the difference? They're foreign. Get my goat.
My boy, you talk like an American.
They're good students, Senator.
Sissies.
But they must preach the gospel of a free India, a non-British India.
No, that won't do.
They're nothing but Reds, Bolsheviks preaching anarchy. Why don't they go to college in Russia instead of here?
You see, Senator, there were three of them last year. One of them is wanted back home.
I remember now. He's to be deported.
And when they get him, they'll hang him.
The other two protest against our not fighting the deportation of their comrade. They insist it means death to him. But we can't handle India's affairs.
I should think not.
Why, England's our ally, that's what I told him. But you can't argue with people like that. Just wait till I find the speeches of Abraham Lincoln.
Fine boy you have, Mr. Fetcherbury.
He's a live one. You should see him in a football game. Wouldn't hurt my feelings in the least to have him be a little more of a student.
Oh, well, you want him to be a regular fella, don't you? And grow into a man among men like yourself?
This country, with its institutions, belong to the people who inhabit it. Whenever they shall grow weary of the existing government, they could exercise their constitutional right of amending it or their revolutionary right to dismember or overthrow it.
Oh, don't get all riled up now, Horace. No one's going to check if Bakshish was right or wrong apart from you. Let's join the celebrations.
Well, I might have got the words right, Doris, but they were meant differently back then.
You mean he was taking Lincoln's words out of context?
Well, that's right. And showing no respect for him at the same time.
Hutch! Oh, but you're too busy with Lincoln's speeches to play.
Oh, Madeline. You don't want to let this sarcastic habit grow on you. Or throw tennis balls in the library, for that matter.
Thanks for the tip. Bakshish was right, wasn't he?
You want me to play tennis with you, Madeline?
I'd rather play than talk politics with you.
Well, that makes two of us.
Aren't you cousins affectionate?
Give me that book.
All right, Lincoln. Well, he did say it, but that was an age of different values. Anyway, the fact that they're cloning it shows it's been misapplied.
You're a sore loser, Horace. I'll see you on court.
You know something? Sometimes I think Madeline Morton is a highbrow in disguise.
Madeline's all right. Yeah, she and I treat each other rough, but that's just being family.
Well, I'll tell you something. I heard Professor Holden say Madeline Morton has a great deal more mind than she's letting on.
Oh, well, Holden, he's erratic. Look at how popular Madeline is.
Because she doesn't let it show most of the time. But she should be careful with that tongue of hers.
Well, look at here. You got no business in the American history section, backsheesh. Take your pamphlets and get out of here.
Now keep your head, Horace.
I know why you're upset. I'm using your history to help people understand our cause. Your own country fought against the British for independence.
Wait, are you looking for a fight? They're our allies now, I tell you.
Well, they're not India's allies. I should be free in America to say these things and to stop the deportation of my comrade.
Why?
Shh! Backsheesh, just go. You could have picked a better day for free speech rather than Morton's anniversary.
But that's why I picked it. Protesting today will make others think.
Did you hear that? Doggone it. They're just here to make trouble. I'm going out.
Horace! Just leave him be!
Yes, it could be done. There is that surplus, and as long as Morton College is socially valuable, but... Your Americanism must be unimpeachable. This man, Holden, stands in the way.
I'm going to have a talk with Professor Holden this afternoon. If he remains, he will give no trouble.
Oh, Uncle, oh. I lost my tennis ball somewhere around here. I'm sorry, am I interrupting?
This is Senator Lewis, Madeline.
How do you do, Miss Morton? I suppose this is a great day for you.
Why, I don't know.
The 40th anniversary of the founding of your grandfather's college? You must be very proud of your illustrious ancestor.
I get a bit bored with him.
Bored with him?
I suppose, because I've heard so many speeches about him. The sainted pioneer. The grand old man of the prairies. I'm sure I haven't any idea what he was really like.
I've tried to tell you, Madeline.
Yes, you have.
I should think you'd be proud to be the granddaughter of this man of vision.
Wouldn't you hate to be the granddaughter of a phrase, Senator? Best to be creating our own visions rather than quoting their history all the time, don't you think?
Madeline, how absurd.
Well, I'm off for some absurd tennis then. Bye, Uncle. Nice to meet you, Senator.
Madeline, if your Aunt Isabel is out there, will you tell her where we are? Right by your grandfather's portrait.
All right.
Strange girl, Madeline. Rather moody.
Well, yes.
Though she's been hearing a great many speeches about her grandfather today.
She should be proud to hear them.
Of course she should, but she's young. I want you to meet my wife, Senator Lewis.
Ah, I should be pleased to meet her. I've heard she means much to the college social standing in the town.
I think she has given it something it wouldn't have had without her. Here she is.
How do you do, Senator Lewis?
It's a great pleasure to meet you.
Felix, why don't we take Senator Lewis home for lunch?
Oh, why, you're very kind.
Sure, there's a great deal to talk about, so why not talk comfortably and really get acquainted? We want to tell you the whole story of Morton College and the good old American spirit behind it.
Well, I'm glad to find you an American, Mrs. Fetcherbury.
Oh, we are that. Morton College is 100% American. Our boys...
Mrs. Fetcherbury, will you go after Madeline? The police have arrived.
What?
What are you saying, Doris?
She's getting into an awful row outside. It's Backsheesh and the other Indian student. Horace told them to keep their mouths shut about Abraham Lincoln and the Constitution, and then the other boys started getting rough, and Madeline... No, come and see. Hurry.
Stay out of this, Madeline. Let the police officer do his job.
I will not. You're the one in the wrong, Horace. You and your boys. Bakshish, Viraj, both of you get behind me.
So you're going to hide behind Madeline Morton's skirt?
I don't need you fighting our cause.
Why? Because I'm a girl?
Because you don't understand.
Then make me.
Please move aside, young lady.
Arrest him and his friend.
But for what?
I don't care what your protest is about. You're coming down to the station with us.
Get your handcuffs onto them.
No! Leave him alone!
Stand aside!
Viraj, run!
Look at him! Yellow belly!
Shut up! You have no idea what true courage is.
Let him go, officer!
It wasn't Bakshish that started the trouble.
He's a Red, an anarchist.
And you're standing up for him?
Yes, I am.
You, Madeline!
Tennis racket was getting old anyway.
Move aside. Move aside, I said.
I'm arresting you both for assaulting an officer of the law.
Officer, she didn't mean it. She's my cousin. Let her go. Officer, get them in the van.
Yes, sir. You are coming with me.
Get in there. Lift that leg up. Get in there. In the van.
You should really let us out of here before my uncle hears about this.
Leave it down back there.
I thought my wrist would be small enough. Oh well. I suppose it's nice to get away from all those boring drills this afternoon. What? Don't look at me like that.
This is not a game.
I know that.
Do you? Why even here?
I wanted to help you. I didn't think it was fair when all along you got linked.
We are not fighting about correct or incorrect quotations, Madeline. We are fighting for a free India and the freedom to fight for it here.
Yes. And you should be able to here. Of course you should. And this is a democracy.
I used to think so. That's why I came to study here. But is this treatment democracy? Our leader Gandhiji argues true democracy has to dare to do the right moral thing at all costs.
Well, in America,
a student cannot distribute a few pamphlets on India's non-cooperation with British rule and our imperialist oppressor's crimes without the threat of deportation.
Oh. When you put it like that.
Look at your own country's treatment of the native tribes. Blundering their land and people. Where is the true democracy in it? Shouldn't you want more for all the people of America?
You sound like my grandfather. He had some of your way of thinking. I know he felt bad about Black Hawk and the Indians. He wanted to do more for people. That's why he gave the hill to the college.
Name me one student from the Sauk tribe. You can't.
Well, they have their own schools.
You know, Gandhiji says, the enemy is fear. We think it is hate, but it is really fear.
I don't want to talk anymore. I would rather look out at the view while I can.
Yes, yes. Look out at your view, your land of the free. I can only dream about mine.
Professor Holden? Here's Mr. Fetcherberry to see you. I'll go down and start locking up the library, sir.
Thank you, Harry.
Oh, Felix, I wasn't expecting you.
Well, it's been quite a day. There's no good reason why you shouldn't be included in it.
Pardon me?
You seem rather serene up here, surrounded by your books.
Yes, I wanted to be serene for a little while.
How is Mrs. Holden?
Better, thank you, but not strong.
She needs the very best care, doesn't she?
Yes. Today is something more than the 40th anniversary, you know. It's the first of the month.
Ah, and bills to pay.
Yes. I didn't want this day to be like this, so I came up here to remind myself of the things I have enjoyed for all these years.
You speak so despondently. You didn't enjoy the day's drills and exercises? There's been such a fine note of optimism in the air, mostly.
I didn't seem to want a fine note of optimism. Do you remember the 10th anniversary of the founding of Morton College?
The 10th? Oh, yes, that was when the library was opened.
I shall never forget your father as he stood out there and said a few words to the faculty and students.
He died the following year.
One felt death near, but that didn't seem the important thing. A student who had fought for liberty of mind, you must be very proud of your heritage.
Yes. Well, I have certainly worked for the college. I'm doing my best now to keep it part of these times.
I remember talking with Silas Morton, too. We stood at this window, looked out over the valley to the lower hill that was his home.
I'm sorry to break in with practical things, but I must ask your help with our present-day circumstances.
Oh?
Frankly, Professor, you are a little hard to finance. Here's the situation. The time for being a little college is past. We must take our place as one of the important colleges or universities of the Midwest.
You have grand plans.
There's a chance for us to be supported by the state and legislative committee. The members who count are very friendly to Morton College. Senator Lewis himself was discussing salaries here. I have to say, your salary makes me blush. It's wrong that a man like you should have these petty worries, particularly with Mrs. Holden's health. Now, this man Lewis is a reactionary, so naturally he doesn't approve of you.
So naturally I am to go.
Go? No, not at all. What have I just been saying?
You want me to be silent, then?
Not that either. Not really. But a little more discreet.
Let Lewis go to thunder.
And let the college go to thunder? I'm not willing to do that. I've made a good many sacrifices for this college. Given more money than I could afford to give. Given time and thought that I could have used for personal gain.
I know you have. I know how hard it is to carry on a dream.
You have to look at the world in which you find yourself. The only way to stay alive is to grow big.
You say you have made sacrifices for Morton College. So have I. I spoke of the 10th anniversary. I was a young man then, just home from studying in Athens. I knew then that I was going to teach something within sociology, and I didn't want anything I felt about beauty to be left out of what I formulated about society.
I remember you told me the Greeks were the passion of your student days.
Yes. And I was just back in town then, visiting my sister here. I had a chance to go to Harvard as instructor. But that afternoon, I heard your father speak about books. I talked with Silas Morton. I found myself telling him about Greece. No one had ever felt it as he felt it.
I know how he used to be.
Yeah, he put his hands on my shoulders. He said, "Young man, don't go away. We need you here. Give us this great thing you've got." And so I stayed.
Now you make this hard for me. Don't you think I'd like to indulge myself in an elevated mood? I can't afford to, and nor can America.
I think you are all wrong. Your senator, too.
He's not my senator. He's the state's, and we have to take him as he is. Why, he objects, of course, to your radical activities. He spoke of your defense of conscientious objectors.
I think a man who is willing to go to prison for what he believes has stuff in him no college should turn its back on.
Well, he doesn't agree with you, and nor do I. My nephew Ben Morton went to France and gave his life. There's more courage in doing that.
I'm not trying to belittle it. But Ben had the whole spirit of his age with him. The man who stands outside the idealism of his time
takes a good deal upon himself, I'd say.
But there isn't any other such loneliness. You know in your heart it's a noble courage.
It lacks humility. And I think you lack it. I'm asking you to cooperate with me for the good of Morton College. And I think we'll have to let the Indian students go.
Go? They are our best students.
This college is for Americans. I'm not going to have foreign revolutionists come here and block the things I've spent my life working for.
I don't know what you mean at all.
Why that disgraceful performance earlier? I can settle things for Madeline. She should be here by now. I'd like you to have a talk with her. But I'm convinced our case before the legislature will be stronger with the Indians gone.
Well, I seem to have missed something. What disgraceful performance?
You mean to say you don't know about the disturbance outside?
I went right home after the speeches, then came up here alone.
Ha! Well, you have been sitting here in contemplation. I've been to the police trying to get my niece out of jail. That's what comes of having radicals around.
What happened?
One of your beloved foreigners made trouble on campus, giving out handbills about freedom for India, howling over deportation. Our American boys wouldn't stand for it. A policeman saw the fuss and started to put backsheesh in his place. Then Madeline rushes in
and it ended with her pounding the policeman with her tennis racket.
Madeline Morton did that?
You seem pleased.
I am interested.
Well, I'm not. I'm disgusted. My niece mixed up in a free-for-all fight and getting taken to the police station. It's the first disgrace we've ever had in our family.
Wasn't there another disgrace?
What do you mean?
When your father fought his government and was banished from his country.
That was not a disgrace.
Wasn't it?
Holden, you can't talk to me like that.
And you can talk to me as you please. I'm a professor, not a servant.
A damn difficult professor. Be reasonable. No one is entirely free. We all have our obligations.
Excuse me. Miss Morton is here now, sir.
Ask her to meet me in the library in 5 minutes, Harry.
Yes, sir.
She's been held since 3 o'clock. That ought to teach her a lesson.
Is there a case against her?
No, I got it fixed up. Explained that it was just college girl foolishness. Another reason why I wanted this talk. I want you to help me with her.
Oh, I can't do that.
She clubbed a police officer, Holden. Tell her she'll have to consider things more and express herself with a little more dignity. She'll listen to you. You don't want to see her destroy herself, do you? You'll help Fred Jordan, but not Madeline? We need to make things right around here at every level.
I shall continue to do all I can toward getting Fred Jordan out of prison. It's a disgrace to America that 2 years after the war closes, he should be kept there. And I shall leave no stone unturned if you persist in dismissing Bakshish and any other Indian students from college. The day you dismiss them, burn our manifesto, Mr. Fedgivery, and admit that Morton College now sells her soul to a state committee.
Well, if you do, I can no longer fight for you.
Very well, then. I will go.
Go where?
I don't know.
What about Mrs. Holden, your family?
We will have to manage some way.
It's not going to be easy for a woman who's in such poor health. I'm trying to talk to you as a friend now. You and I have a good many ties, Holden. You know how much Isabel has cared for your wife.
She has been very, very good to her.
Sir, your niece is asking if she should wait, or can she go and play some tennis?
Tell her to wait.
Yes, sir.
Her arrest doesn't seem to have chastened her.
An honestly held conviction doesn't need chastening.
Well, honesty can be a selfish thing. We all need to think about others, about society. Every person has to make sacrifices for the age we live in, for loved ones. Please think about what I've said, Holden.
There you are. You wanted to speak to me, Uncle Felix?
Of course I want to speak to you.
I feel awful about banging up my racket like this. I mean, it wasn't much of a match against a police officer's club. But as long as you were asking me what I wanted for my birthday...
Madeline, I'm not here to discuss your birthday.
Oh? Why then?
I'm tired out. I've had a nerve-wracking day.
Isn't that too bad? Those speeches were so boresome, and that old senator person...
Madeline, have you no intelligence? Hasn't it occurred to you that your performance today would worry me?
I suppose it was a nuisance, and on such a busy day. But if you're going to worry, Horace is the one you should worry about. He started it all up. He made me ashamed.
And you're not at all ashamed of what you have done.
Why, no?
Then you'd better be. A girl who rushes in and assaults an officer.
But Uncle Felix, I had to stop him. No one else did.
I don't know whether you're trying to be naive. You could be dismissed from school for what you did.
Well, I'm ready to be dismissed from any school that would dismiss for that.
Madeline, have you no love for this place?
Yes, I have. You could say that's why I did it. All of you have been proclaiming grandfather all day. Now, I think my actions are in keeping with his true sentiments. He loved the land, freedom, education. Bakshish reminded me of that.
Do not use your grandfather to justify Bakshish's behavior, nor yours.
I'm not. But maybe I'm starting to understand who grandfather was. Sometimes when I'm out for a walk on the prairie, I wonder if I start to understand his feeling about Black Hawk and his people. Father told me all about why he gave up his land so he wouldn't feel so ashamed.
That was entirely different. A different time.
Why, Uncle Felix? I love the hill. The farm where I was born. Why would Bakshish love India any less? I would have been ashamed to have stood by and not defended them. But I'm grateful you got me out of jail. And I know Bakshish will appreciate it too.
He's still being held for this hearing.
What? You mean you just came and got me and left him there?
Exactly.
Then I'll have to go get him.
You will not. You don't get people out of jail by stopping by and calling for them.
But you got me.
Because of years of influence. It wasn't simple. Things of this nature are pretty serious nowadays.
But while you were fixing things for me, why didn't you arrange things for him too?
Because I am not in the business of getting foreign revolutionists out of jail.
But he didn't do as much as I did.
It isn't what he did. It's what he is. We don't want him here.
Well, I do. Is it true that Bakshish's friend from last year is going to be deported? Is America going to turn him over to the government he fought?
It's true. And in a way, I am not sorry about Bakshish being detained today. I have an idea he will be deported, too. I don't think they have money to fight a court case.
I think that's rotten of you, Uncle. Rotten of Morton College. I didn't want to believe him when he told me American democracy wasn't true in its nature, but now I know.
Your actions and opinions are unlikely to affect things either way, Madeline.
Well, I'm 21 next Tuesday. Isn't it on my 21st birthday I get that money Grandfather Morton left me?
What are you driving at?
Bakshish can have my money.
Are you crazy? What are these people to you?
They're people from the other side of the world who came here believing in us. Drawn from the far side of the world by things we say about ourselves. Well, I'm going to pretend, just for fun, that what we Americans say about ourselves is true. That we live in a true democracy. Please arrange how I can get my money as soon as it's mine.
And this is what you say to me at the end of my years of trusteeship. If you could know how I've nursed that little legacy for you. I shall not permit you to destroy yourself!
I don't see how you can keep me from destroying myself.
Have I? Has my house been nothing to you all these years?
I've had my best times at your house. Things would have been very happy for me without you all, even though Horace gets my goat.
And your Aunt Isabel, does she get your goat?
I love Auntie. You know that. What has that got to do with it?
You are going to use Silas Morton's money to knife his college.
Oh, Uncle Felix, that's silly.
If Silas Morton's granddaughter casts in her lot with revolutionists, Morton College will get no help from the state.
I'm not casting in my lot with revolutionists. If it's true, as you say, that you have to have money in order to get justice,
I didn't say that.
Well, you did, Uncle Felix. You said these strangers in our country are going to be abused because they're poor. What else could I do with my money and not feel like a skunk?
You're a romantic girl, Madeline. Skunk and all. Rather nice. A good heart. But you are going against the spirit of this country.
America is a democracy, Uncle.
And we have just fought a great war for democracy.
Well, that's no reason not to strive for more of it.
I should think you would have a little more feeling about the war, about America, when you consider where your brother is.
Ben had all kinds of reasons for going to France. He wanted a trip, wanted to see Paris, poor kid, get a French girl. It was all mixed up, but he was a pretty decent sort. I'll say so. And one thing I do know, Ben never went to war and over the top to back up the argument you're making now.
Very well. I will discontinue the argument I'm making now. I've been trying to save you from pretty serious things. The regret of having stood in the way of Morton College. The horror of driving your father insane.
What?
Well, one more thing would do it. If he lost you, if you end up in jail.
I think it's pretty terrible to wish all that on poor father.
It's life that has wished it on him. It's just one other way of paying the price for his country. The harsh times of pioneer life he experienced. Losing your mother.
He never talks about her. How she died, even. Why won't he? How did he get this way? Mother wouldn't have cared for him if he'd always been like that.
He had no endurance for losing her love.
You know, Uncle Felix, I'm afraid that's true. But don't use Father's condition against me now.
How else am I going to get through to you?
What's that? Look! That's Horace! That's Horace's call! That's for his gang! Are they going to start something now that will get Viraj in jail too?
I forbid you to get involved! Do you hear me?
Let me go, Uncle! If you don't, I swear I'll jump out of that window!
That window stays closed.
You think you can keep me in here?
Listen to me. If you go out there and get in trouble a second time, I can't make it right for you.
Then don't. Viraj, I'm coming.
Get back here. You could get 20 years in prison for things you'll say if you rush out there now. There are women in prison for saying no more than what you've said here to me.
And you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Ashamed of myself?
Yes, aren't you an American? The police are back. Officer, you leave that boy alone.
Harry says so.
Harry.
I do. And I'm talking for Morton College.
Go and get Professor Holden here quickly. Yeah, that's right. Close that window or you'll be expelled.
Didn't I see you at the station?
You sure did. My grandfather gave this hill to Morton College, a place where anybody from any land can come and say what he believes to be true. Beat it, you chump. Viraj, don't let him take hold of you like that. Don't let me get down there.
What? Holden, help me keep a hold of it. Don't just stand there.
We shouldn't keep her from doing what she thinks is right.
Thanks for the vote of confidence, Professor.
Oh my God, she's crazy.
Get off him!
That's the best of it. You won't see better corn than that this year. What are you doing messing up my porch?
I'm drawing a chalk cell. 3 feet by 6 feet. Like Fred Jordan's, like Bakshish and Viraj's. They're all in jail now.
I can't help that. Yes, sir. This is the best corn I ever had.
Aren't you going to wish me a happy birthday, Father?
Is it 21 years already? Corn's better now than it was then.
Bakshish got this letter out to me on a scrap of paper. Written so fine I can hardly read it. He's in what they call the hold. He gets 2 slices of bread a day. He gets water. That's all he gets.
Well, he'd better have minded his own business. And you better mind yours. I've got no money to spend in the courts. I'll not mortgage this farm. It's been clear since the day my father's father got it from the government. Grows the best corn in the Mississippi Valley.
I'm not asking you to mortgage it.
Then go and see your Uncle Felix. Make it up with him. Say you're sorry and he'll help you.
I'll not go to Uncle Felix.
Well, who will you go to then? You come before this United States commissioner with no one behind you. He'll hold you for the grand jury. Judge Watkins told Felix there's not a doubt about it. You know what that means. It means you're on your way to a cell.
That's why I've been drawing one. See if I can get used to the idea.
Can't see nothing from a cell. No corn, no land, no nothing. What the hell is Emil Johnson doing here?
Hello, Emil.
How are you, Madeline? How do, Mr. Morton?
I'll take my corn inside.
Looks like you and I might take a ride together, Madeline. You come before the commissioner at 4.
What have you got to do with it?
Oh, Emil has a courthouse job now, Father. He's part of the law.
Well, he's not gonna take you to the law. Not Emil Johnson.
Why, Father? Why not Emil? Since I'm going, I think it's nice to go in with someone I know and a neighbor like Emil.
If this is why he lived...
I'm sorry. I don't even understand him at times. He's not taking my court appearance well.
It's too bad that anybody has to take Madeline in. That's fine corn, Mr. Morton. My corn's getting better all the time, but I'd like to get some of yours for seed.
You get my corn? I raise this corn for you?
I'll go for now. I have to go on to Beard's Crossing. I'll stop for you on my way back. Couldn't you telephone your uncle? You don't know what you're going up against. Those students are being held for the grand jury. They're locked up now. No bail for them. Oh, we've given them a nice little taste of prison life in America, then they'll be sent back home to see what India can treat them to.
Why are you so pleased about it, Emil?
Pleased? It's nothing to me. I'm just telling you. I guess you don't know much about the Espionage Act, or you'd go and make a friendly little call on your uncle. Or perhaps you didn't know what you were saying. You're just a girl.
But I did realize what I was saying. Every word.
What? Gee, you don't know what it means.
I do know what it means. It means not being a coward. You know, once in a while, you have to say what you think or hate yourself.
Then hate yourself.
No, thank you. Spoils my fun.
Well, look here, Madeline. Aren't you spoiling your fun now? You're a girl who likes to be out. How'd you like to be where you couldn't even see out?
There oughtn't to be such places.
Oh, well, Jesus. If you're going to talk about that, you can't change the way things are.
Why can't I?
Well, who do you think you are?
I think I'm an American. And for that reason, I think I have something to say about America.
Huh. America will lock you up for your pains.
All right. If it's come to that, maybe I'd rather be a locked-up American than a free American.
I don't think you'd like prison, Madeline. There's not much tennis played there. Take a tip. Telephone your uncle. I'll come back for you in a little while. It'll be official next time.
Might be a fine, and they might come down on me and take my land.
Oh, no, Father, I think not. Anyway, I have a little money of my own. Grandfather Morton left me something. I get it today. I'm 21, remember?
Your birthday? 21? All those years ago?
God, it's the first birthday I can remember that I haven't had a party.
It was your Aunt Isabel gave you your parties.
Yes. Oh, well, I don't need a party. I'm grown up now.
Grown up now and going off and leaving me alone. You two, the last one. And what for? There used to be so many in this house. My grandmother, she sat there telling me stories of the Indians. Father, it wasn't ever lonely where Father was. Then my Madeline came to this house, lived with me in this house. Then one day she walked out of this house, through that door, through the field, out of this house.
You never tell me about her, how she died.
Then Ben, out of this house, killed in France. Now you, with Emil Johnson, of all the people. Well, don't let him touch my corn. If he touches one kernel of this corn, I wonder where he went. How do I know he went where he said he was going? I don't know, as that South Bend's locked.
Oh, Father, stay with me. Today of all days.
I'll find out what he's up to.
Ira?
See if you can talk some sense into her.
Oh, Auntie, I'm glad you came. Come in. Oh. It's my birthday and I'm so lonely.
Oh, my dear little girl. Don't I know it's your birthday? Just see what I got for you.
Oh. Why, it's a tennis racket.
You roughed up your old one, so I couldn't imagine Madeline without a nice racket. Now, but be careful. It's meant for tennis balls.
Wonder where I'll play now.
Why, you'll play on the courts at Morton College. Who has a better right?
Oh, I don't know.
We'll have to get things straightened out. It was really dreadful of you, Madeline, to rush out a second time. It isn't as if they were people who were anything to you.
But Auntie, they are something to me.
Oh, dear. That's what Horace said.
What's Horace said now?
That you must have a crush on one of them.
Yeah, that's what he would say. God, that makes me mad. He's a
headstrong boy, but a very loving one. He's dear to me, Madeline.
Yes. You are good to each other.
Of course we are. We all have to stand together. All of us who are the same kind of people must stand together, because the thing that makes us the same kind of people is threatened, whether it's revolutionaries in Russia or India or here.
Well, don't you think we're rather threatening it ourselves, Auntie?
Why, no. We're fighting for it.
Fighting for what?
For Americanism. For democracy.
Horace is fighting for it?
Oh, well, Horace does go at it as if it was a football game, but his heart's in the right place.
And somehow, I don't seem to see my heart in that place.
It's too bad you and Horace quarrel. But you and I don't quarrel, Madeline.
No. You and I don't quarrel.
Funny child. Do you want us to?
Not at all. Have some fudge, Auntie. I made it.
Oh. You're using your mother's old Hungarian dish? I'm not allowed to. Your uncle is so precious about our pieces. And here you are with fudge in one of them.
I made the fudge because, I don't know, I had to do something to celebrate my birthday.
Oh, my darling.
And then that didn't seem to make a birthday, so I happened to see this. It was nice to get it down and use it. Almost as if Mother was giving me a birthday present.
And how she would love to give you a birthday present.
It was her mother's, I suppose, and they brought it from Hungary.
Yes. They brought only a very few things with them and left so many beautiful ones behind.
Nice of them, wasn't it? To leave their own beautiful things, their own beautiful life behind, simply because they believe life should be more beautiful for more people.
Yes. Well, now, as to the birthday, what do you suppose Sarah's doing this very instant? Running around buying 21 red candles, big birthday cake for your party tonight.
But, Auntie, I don't see how I can be there.
Listen, we've got to use our wits and all pull together. I've never seen your uncle as worried and as sad. What would life be without the love we have for each other?
The love we have for each other?
Why, yes! Oh, don't turn away from us, Madeline. I wonder if you realize how your uncle has worked to have life be a happy thing for all of us. Be a little generous to him. He's had this great burden of bringing something from another day on into this day. It's been his life's work. And come now, Madeline, isn't it a little absurd for you to leave home over India's form of government?
It's not India. It's America.
Even Professor Holden thinks you should drop whatever cause you think you're following. He's a principled man, but even he has compromised for the sake of his family.
I hope I never have a family.
You mean the responsibility it brings? Well, that's what life is. Doing for one another, sacrificing for one another. You'll miss the best of life if you don't have one.
What has family done for Father?
Oh, poor Ira. So much has been taken from him. Don't hurt him again, Madeline. You want to help him, don't you? No, dear. About your birthday party.
The United States Commissioner is giving me my birthday party.
Well, he'll have to put his party off. Your uncle has been thinking it all through. We're to go to his office, and you'll have a talk with him and with Judge Watkins. He's off the state supreme bench now and practicing again. And as a favor to your uncle, he will be your lawyer. Then you and I will go home and call up some of the college crowd to come in and dance tonight.
And what's the price of all this, Auntie?
Oh. Why, simply say, you felt sorry for the Indian students because they seemed rather alone, that You hadn't realized what they were. You hadn't thought out what you were saying.
And that I'm sorry and will never do it again.
I don't know that you need to say that. It would be gracious, I think, to imply it.
I'm sorry you had the cake made. I suppose you can eat it anyway. I can't eat it.
Oh, why, Madeline?
Auntie, I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings.
They've been good birthday cakes, haven't they, Madeline?
I don't know what I would have done without them. Don't know what I will do without them.
Don't try to. Just let me go on helping you. That's all I ask. I held you when you were a little baby without your mother. All those years count for something. There's just nothing to life if years of love don't count for something.
I do love you, Auntie.
Look out there. Emil's eyeing up my cornfields from his courthouse car. Hasn't the boy taken enough from me? What's wrong?
Oh, don't cry. No, not in this house. Your aunt and uncle will fix it up. The law won't take you this time, and you won't do it again.
What does it matter what they do to me?
What are you crying about, then?
It's the world.
The world? If that's all you've got to cry about, tell her that's nothing to cry about. What's the matter with you, Madeline? That's crazy, crying about the world. What good has ever come to this house through caring about the world? What good's that college? Better we had that hill. Why is there no one in this house today but me and you? Where's your mother? Where's your brother? The world!
Please, listen to us, Madeline. Listen to Professor Holden. Look. Here. He's written you a letter in his own hand. Open it.
Maybe he can talk some sense into you. Read it.
All right. Dear Madeline, I have been hearing of your situation from your uncle and aunt. As you may know, I have known people of fine and daring mind. They do a thing that puts them apart. It may be the big, brave thing, but the apartness does something to them. I've seen it many times, so many times. I fear for you. You do this thing, and you'll find yourself with people who, in many ways, you don't care for at all. Find yourself apart from people who, in most ways, are your own people. You're many-sided, Madeline. I hate to see you, so young, close a door on so much life. I'm just being as honest with you as I know how. I myself am making compromises to stay within society. I don't like it, but there are reasons for doing it. I can't see you leave us and everything you know without telling you this. You see, it's not a clean-cut case. The side of the world or the side of the angels. And I hate to see you lose the fullness of life. Tell me the truth, Auntie. Did Uncle force him to write this letter?
Oh, of course he didn't. You should know Professor Holden knows his own mind. Can you listen to his words? He is pleading with you to let the case go. You don't believe me? Well, then, I'll go and get him myself. He's out walking with his wife. I'll bring him here so he can vouch for his letter himself. He would have come with me, but he wanted to give us some privacy. Make sure you wait for us. Madeline?
Thank you, Auntie.
Bring him over quick, man. I'll not have Emil Johnson take him.
I'll leave the door open, Father. I want to look at the hill.
Yes. Yeah, keep looking. And get your head straight instead of drawing chalk cells.
I don't know if I can. Because I know what's in my heart. You know, Grandfather Morton came to me in a dream last night. He's the one that drew that chalk circle on the porch. He drew it in my mind.
No, not my father. He drew fields of corn.
He drew it in my mind, Father, and said, if this is what America has become, goddamn America.
Don't you say that. He did not say that. Never. He loved this earth.
The earth, yes. But this isn't the country he had a vision for. Don't you want me to hold that vision, Father? Shouldn't we be striving for more than what we are? Isn't that what he wanted?
You're twisting everything. Where's your aunt? Your professor, they'll make you understand. Not Emil Johnson. It's not what your mother died for.
Then tell me about her.
Why touch someone you've not touched in 19 years?
Father, please. You must talk to me. No one has ever told me about her, except that she was beautiful. Well, why can't Uncle Felix talk about her? Why can't you? Wouldn't you want me to know her? Tell me about her. It's my birthday and I need my mother. Try. Even if it hurts. What has she to do with Emil Johnson?
What has she to do with him? She died so he could live. He lived because she's dead. And what is he alongside her? How do you know that? Finding in me what I didn't know was there. Then she came. That ignorant, sweet Emil Johnson's mother running through the cornfield like a crazy woman. Miss Morton, come help me. My children are choking. Diphtheria they had, but out of this house she ran. I'm madly leaving you, her own baby, running as fast as she could through the cornfield after that immigrant woman. She stumbled in the rough field, fell to her knees. That was the last I saw of her. She choked to death in that sweet's house. They lived.
Oh, Father, but how lovely of her.
Lovely? Lovely to leave you without a mother and leave me without her after I'd had her. Wasn't she worth more than them?
Yes. She was worth so much that she never stopped to think about how much she was worth.
Oh, if you'd known her, you couldn't take it like that. And now you cry about the world. Look what it did for your mother, your brother. He could have minded his own business.
No. It was fine of him to go give his life for what he believed in.
Waste. Waste. Nothing but waste. The life of this house. Why don't you leave me here all alone in this house where so many lived before? What Indians alongside your own father and him needing you? It won't be long. After a little, I'll be dead or crazy or something.
Father, I don't know what to do.
Why can't nothing stay at home? Not even the corn stays at home. If only the wind wouldn't blow. Why can't I have my field to myself? Why can't I keep what's mine? All these years, I've worked to make it better. I wanted it to be the most that it could be. My father used to talk about the Indians, how our land was their land. The Indians lived happier than us. Look at our wars, strikes, prisons. But I've made the corn more. This land that was once Indian maize now grows corn. I'd like to have the Indians see my corn. I'd like to see them side by side, their Indian maize, my corn.
Stop, Father, please.
I wanted to stay in my field, but it goes away. The prevailing wind takes it on to the Johnsons. them Swedes that took my family. I hear it. I can see it. Pollen, soft golden dust to make new life going on to them. And them too ignorant to know what's making their corn better. I want my field to myself. The wind shall stand still. I'll make it. I'll find a way. Leave me alone and I'll think it out. Go outside and leave me alone a while.
All right. I will. Madeline. Madeline. Professor Holden has had to take his wife home. She's been taken poorly, but he says he will meet you and your uncle at Judge Watkins' office before court. So we should go down there, dear. It's time for us to go.
I'm going in with Emil Johnson.
Why? We thought you'd come with us.
No. I have to be the most I can be. I want the wind to have something to carry.
I don't understand.
The world is all a moving field, Auntie. Nothing is to itself. If America thinks so, then America is like father. I don't feel alone anymore. The wind has come through. Wind rich from lives now gone. Grandfather Fegeberry, a gift from a field far off. Silas Morton, mother. No, I'm not alone anymore. And afraid. I'm not even afraid.
But, Madeline, you're leaving your father.
I'm not leaving what's greater in him than he knows.
What about Morton College?
For that runt on a high hill?
Oh.
Yes, I'm leaving Grandfather's college. Then maybe I can one day lie under the same sod with him and not be ashamed. Here's Emil now. Do you see the hawks flying, Auntie? I think I have Black Hawk's approval, too.
Madeline, I didn't tell you. I hoped it wouldn't be necessary, but your uncle said if you refused to do it his way, he could do absolutely nothing for you, not even bail.
Of course not. I wouldn't expect him to.
I feel so deeply about these things. America, loyalty. He said if you didn't come with us, it would be final. Madeline, even between you and me.
I'm sorry, Auntie. You know how I love you. But Father has been telling me about the corn. It gives itself away all the time. The best corn, a gift to other corn. What you are, that doesn't stay with you. You need to give to be the most you can be. So life will be more because you were more.
You have been more to me. Like my own daughter.
Goodbye. Auntie dearest, thank you for the birthday present, the cake, everything. Everything. All the years.
We better go, Madeline. It'll go worse for you if you're late for court.
I'll be with you in an instant, Emil. I want to say goodbye to my father. Father, won't you come out and see me off? Always remember how much I love you. As much as you love the corn, the earth.
Madeline, please.
You take care of my tennis racket for me, Auntie. I just need my hat and wrap. I'm coming, Emil! I'm coming.
In Inheritors, written by Susan Glaspell and adapted by Samima Baig. Grandmother was played by Lorelei King. Felix by Nathan Osgood. Madeline, Samantha Dakin. Silas and his son Ira, Clive Hayward. Joseph, Stephen Critchlow. Senator Lewis, Colin Stinton. Isabel, Jane Slavin. Professor Holden, Tony Turner. Mr. Smith and Emil, Henry Divas. Bakshish, Supam Saraf. Young Felix and Horace, Joshua Riley. Doris, Eleanor Coleman. And Harry and the Police Officer, Stuart Campbell. Inheritors, a BBC audio production for Radio 3, was directed by Tracy Neal.
A test of agility and control, stamina and nerve, power and passion. 16 of the finest singers from across the globe compete for the coveted Cardiff Singer of the World Song Prize. The Song Prize final on Radio 3 and BBC Sounds. On Thursday evening at 7:30 with highlights from the heats on Tuesday to Thursday lunchtimes at 1.
It's 9:05, and time now on Radio 3 to join Hannah French for her weekly exploration of the best new recordings in classical music.
Hello, good evening, welcome to Record Review Extra. And it would seem that Beethoven's in a playful mood. Presto from Beethoven's String Quartet No. 13 in B-flat major, Opus 130, played by the Ennis Quartet. It's the first of four albums recorded in a two-week intensive